And how long have you been doing the research here?
For 1 year, I think. For 1 year, 1.5 years, I don't know. 1.5 years.
And this was completely just through the university, or?
Mm-hmm. Through the university. Yeah, because I need this research to be able to finish the university, this final research.
What will you do when you finish?
I don't know. I will continue my research. And I love teaching English. I love being with children.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And how about, have you learned anything about Krishna consciousness?
I don't know many things about Krishna consciousness, but little things, little by little, I think. And I feel sympathy toward this. That's why I do research.
Okay. And now you want to talk about prasadam?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay.
If we can.
Yeah?
For example, my question would be, what's the meaning of prasadam, and what does it mean for you personally? What does prasadam mean for you personally?
Personally, or you're talking about in terms of a principle, what prasadam is? In other words, one thing is personally, and then the other is what actually...
What actually prasadam, and then what does it mean for you personally? So by definition and personally?
You know, first is the concept of Krishna as being God. And you know, for us, God is neither just a concept or a principle, but he's a existing person. He's a supreme person. He's not like you or me, but he exists. And what motivates him is exchanges of love. That's what motivates every person. So God, but the difference between us is that we reciprocate with a limited number of people. You can only be in love with one man at a time. You generally only feel the same type of love for one pair of parents, have love only for your own children, so it's limited. That's because we're limited. God is unlimited. So he has both unlimited ability to love, and he has unlimited desire to be loved. So, but how do you exchange love with God? There are many ways, but when it talks about prasadam, then everyone knows, for instance, when you go to your mother's house, she wants to feed you. One thing is because she wants you to eat, but it's more than just that. She's showing her love. And you can actually taste a mother's love in the food that she cooks. So when we cook and offer food to Krishna, then God doesn't need to eat. But he accepts that food as an offering of love. Just like you may go to your mother's house just after you've eaten, and you may not be hungry, but because she so much wants you to eat out of love, you eat it. So that's the same thing. When you show your love, there are many ways to show love to Krishna, but just like we eat, so when we offer food in the same way as we offer each other food, when we offer food to Krishna as a show of love, when he accepts that love in the form of food, that food is called prasadam. And what's happened is that he's reciprocating with your love. And you can taste that in the food, in the prasadam. it will taste different.
Many baptized said.
But you have to be a devotee to taste it. Just like your mother's love, if you just take it to someone on the street, that cooking, they may not be able to taste it, but you should be able to taste it because you have a relationship with her. So that's what prasadam is. Prasadam is food that's offered to Krishna with love that he then accepts. To him it tastes different because we've offered him love, and to us it tastes different because he accepts it. So the word prasadam actually means mercy. So Krishna says prasade sarva dukkanam. And what's the effect of that is that when we eat, because we need to eat, he doesn't need to eat, but we need to eat. When we eat, prasade sarva dukkanam, it has an effect on us. So what's that effect? Bhagavad Gita says sarva duk. It means that one becomes free from all suffering. One becomes free from the things that cause suffering, which is distress of the mind, disease, bad habits that we actually have, such as greed and lust and anger. So by eating prasadam, you become free from these things. In the same way as by chanting Hare Krishna, you become free from these things. Or by reading scripture and by so many other spiritual activities. So, I mean, in brief, that's what prasadam is in general. For me, prasadam is personally the one of the things that really attracted me to Krishna consciousness, as it does many people. All the people who are eating here, I don't know, 6,000 people over the last 3 days, everything they're eating is prasadam. And, well, I'll give you an example. When for instance, in our restaurant, we shut down our restaurant to renovate it, people come, and they're very upset. They're upset because they can't eat. But the other is, you know, they have this thing that says, I don't know what it is, but I'm just addicted to eating this kind of food. And even if I eat the same food in an Indian restaurant, it's not the same. So they can, in fact, in the early 1990s, even the police was investigating the temple because there was a rumor that we put drugs in the food. Because when people eat the food, then they change. So they do change. It wasn't because of drugs. It's because Krishna's mercy is there and you can experience that change. It requires that if someone tries it, then he experiences that. So for me, that was also something in the beginning of Krishna consciousness, that by eating prasadam, it became a different experience. It wasn't eating anymore. So eating, everyone, there's a certain experience to eating. But prasadam was a different thing. It's something that goes to the heart. It's something that awakens your consciousness. It's something that it's like a new life experience. And so personally for me, and then of course that's always been also a connection that I've had with Krishna, to cook food that then is offered to him, or practically speaking every day for the last 40 years, what I've always offered some food to Krishna, which has then become prasadam, and eaten it. ask any questions about that?
Cooking?
Yes. I'm not such a good cook, and I'm not. I haven't had. It hasn't been so much my service. I used to cook for myself for some years, which means that I would offer everything to Krishna. But it was very simple cooking. So there's just sort of basic cooking, and then there's very fancy cooking with fancy different types of spices and complicated cooking, which is what they really do for the deities. So we have, there's generally two types of prasadam that you have.
Yeah,
so there's two types. One is when the pujaris cook for the deities, and then they cook what we call in England English opulent food. So it's cooked in ghee, it's spicy, some things are fried, that's opulent. Opulent means that it's very, it's not something that humans can eat every day. It's very rich. And then the other type of prasadam is offering what we eat. In other words, we cook relatively simple things, steam things, rice, steamed vegetables, things that are, yeah. And then we offer that to Krishna. Both are equally acceptable. You could say that the pujari cooking is the type of cooking that you offer to a king, because we worship Krishna like God, not like God, we worship him as a king. That's about the nearest experience we can have in the world with worshiping God. So what, you know, what they would cook for a king is they would cook many, 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 maybe hundreds of preparations, and he only eats a few, but that's what a king means. He just, maybe only just looks at most of them. And the preparations are exotic and rich and fancy. So that's what we cook for Krishna. And then we eat a little of that. That's called Mahaprasadam. Because the difference between prasadam and Mahaprasadam is Mahaprasadam is you only cook for Krishna with no other purpose. Prasadam is, for instance, in the big kitchen, what we cook for the devotees. We're cooking for the devotees, what's good for them, so we're not exactly cooking for the deities. But we offer what we cook for the devotees to the deities. So it's prasadam because Krishna accepts it, but there's a little difference in terms of the purpose. One is cooking for Krishna, and the other one is cooking for the devotees and offering it to Krishna.
Okay. I see the difference now.
Mahaprasadam and prasadam.
Okay. Can I ask you about your favorite food? Because I'm
favorite food.
Have you got any favorite food?
Yeah, my favorite food is like Kerala. Kerala, yes, Kesharu. Hey, Manjwali.
I've heard it, but I don't know the meaning.
Kerala, as a Kesharu, to the Ian, Nag. My Indian Nag, spinach, also. Spinach is I also like. Kerala, spinach, asparagus, and cauliflower pakoras.
And Chaitanya
Prabhu
said to me today that you like salads and milk and simple dishes.
Steamed things. Health-wise, yes. That's good for me, but I like other things that are not necessarily, things that you like are not necessarily healthy.
Yeah. For example, sweets.
No, meat I don't like.
Yeah.
But even just to eat, for instance, like Mahaprasadam, what the deities get every day, you can do it if you're young, but there's a limit as to how much you can do that. You either have to be God or you have to be young to eat like that all the time. And then, of course, Krishna says, what will he accept? So he says, patram, pushpam, palam, toyam. He says, a leaf, fruit, flower, water, vegetables, these are the things he accepts. So people say, well, why can't I offer meat? Because Krishna doesn't accept it. So then it doesn't become prasada.
And we cannot also offer onion, for instance, and eggs.
Garlic, eggs, fish.
Yeah.
No. Karela, Magyarula, Sárga, Kesserű, hogy mondja?
Én hallottam, csak nem tudom.
De annak van egy magyar neve, nem? Nem Kesserű dinnye, vagy Kesserű valami? Karela.
Hallottam róla, a nevét sokszor, de nem tudtam, hogy mivel én megnevettem.
Azt hittem, hogy te Kesserű valami. Mash? Something else?
Other questions? Yeah. With whom do you like eating? With whom?
I like eating with people who like eating. Chaitanya is a very bad person to eat because he doesn't eat. He doesn't eat anything. He's very picky. He eats like a 5-year-old child.
And can we eat with Mataji's also, or I don't know the rules, so can you explain to me?
Yes, we eat with ladies. I mean, I eat in the temple room usually. I eat wherever the devotees eat.
Mm-hmm.
So I eat with them. But best person's eating means that it's also enjoying eating is sort of is also an exchange. And you know, to get an appetite for eating and to be enthusiastic for eating, you have to be in good company. So you have to have people who also like eating, who like to have light conversation while they're eating, and it makes a certain type of dynamic, chemistry, because you may have good food. Eating alone, I don't like to eat alone. I don't eat very much if I eat alone. I eat much better if there's other people. Because eating is also one of the... There are 6 exchanges also of love between devotees. Tadati tadigrinati guya makyati tuchati bunte bojayate chayvam. So that says that to give gifts and to accept gifts, to reveal your mind before others and to listen to them, and then to give prasadam and accept prasadam. In other words, people also exchange love, as I gave the example with the mother, by taking prasadam, by cooking for each other, and eating together is also a very nice way of exchanging love. Maybe he knows. That's it, Angus. Mia Karela, Magyarul, Kesserű. No, Kesserű.
Nem ettem. Tudod mi? Nem ettem egy karellát.
hallottam már csak,
nem keserű dínyel, vagy keserű...
Nem tudom, a karella, én nem tudom, van-e magyar neve annak.
Van, keserű valami.
Valami keserű, az én keserű. Nem tudom.
Egy ilyen egzotikus. De nekünk is nő itt. Olyan néz, úgy néz ki, mint egy uborka.
Mint egy ilyen össze, ilyen furcsa alakú uborka. Ilyen. Hát, már keresd meg itt a kertészetet akkor.
Jó. Okay. Más?
Is eating together a ritual, some kind of ritual in Krishna consciousness?
Eating together?
Yeah, some kind of ritual.
It's a tradition that Vaishnavas, because it's an exchange of love, and not only that, we consider it the form of worship, because we're not eating food, we're not eating, we're taking prasadam. So this is Krishna's giving us his mercy, so accepting Krishna's mercy is a form of worship. So for us, eating is worship. And that's why we do it together, because you know our Krishna consciousness movement is Sankirtan movement. So it means that we, just like we chant together, so we also eat together. It's also a socially binding activity. It makes for teamwork and team building. That builds in India, very, very common. Of course, in families is one thing, but in communities, particularly religious communities, to eat together. So, because it's an act of worship, because it's an act of loving exchange, because it helps develop our communal relationships, so we eat together. On the other hand, in the evening, for instance, everyone eats at home, but generally lunchtime and particularly breakfast.
And then, people.
Yeah, and then aside from that, it's very economical. Because if you cook for 100 people on one stove, it doesn't cost much. It's much easier than cooking for 100 people on 100 stoves. It takes lots less time and energy and much less expense. So it's very practical.
And the question would be, why there is a room the Prabhus and Matajis to eat separately in the temple? So why is this rule? Why
there is
this rule?
As far as eating, even when you see when we do kirtan, girls in one line, men in another.
Yeah.
In public, men and women shouldn't mix. One is because it's informal. It breeds familiarity, particularly amongst those who are not husband and wife. Not just in Krishna conscious culture, but in so many other cultures, it has always been that in public, men and women don't mix. Why? Because men and women mixing informally is a new, modern, more or less Western concept, and it ends up in promiscuity, it ends up in illicit activities, and it doesn't actually guard the type of values that usually religions hold dear, which is that, you know, boys and girls, first of all, they should marry, they should stay married, and and that becoming very familiar or becoming too familiar will end up in some type of breach of moral and religious principles. And then obviously when you're, for instance, if you're dancing or something together, then inevitably you're physically touching. There's all types of other types of contact. When for husband and wife in their home, that's completely natural, of course.
It's okay.
Of course.
I'm surprised by this fact a bit. I don't know.
When I went to school, boys and girls didn't sit beside each other. Do they now?
Yeah.
It wasn't like that. And it had nothing to do with religion. That's the way it was. That was 50 years ago like that. Boys sat on one side of the room, girls sat on another. And when I went very young, then boys went to one classroom and girls went to another. And that was just in an ordinary school. It had nothing to do with Krishna or religion or anything. It was the tradition, but your generation doesn't even have experience of that anymore. Now they even use the same toilet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. In many schools, yeah. I think, and in many student hostels, there are the same toilet for boys and girls. And yeah, it's very cheap.
So, because we base our interaction on values, and therefore the value is that close association is for those who have committed to each other. And unless you've committed to each other, you don't associate closely with someone else.